Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you are listening wherever podcasts are served, thank you so much. We appreciate your amazing and continued support. If you like this show, you can take the additional step of just sharing it with your friends and family. You can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggression, or you can go to the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thank you to our sponsors that make this show possible. Legal Shield has been in business for 50 years. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, and they are available in Canada and the United States. And I'll tell you what, if you haven't heard of them before, you really owe it to yourself to at least check out the website, www.don'tgetpushedaround.com. That is specific to this show. I'll tell you, you will be blown away with what they're offering. Basically, what it is it's the collective buying power of all of us directed towards high-powered law firms in your area. Just makes everything more affordable. You get access to an attorney in your area that has, on average, 22 years of experience. So you're going to get people with a ton of knowledge, not fresh out of law school. Costs you a dollar a day, $30 a month for this service. I'll tell you what, it is well worth it. You can pay it off. You can justify the expense for the next decade. If you were to set up an appointment immediately with the law firm in your area and knock out your last will and testament, your financial power of attorney, your medical directive, all of that stuff for yourself and for your spouse, that'll cost you thousands of dollars if you do that on your own. And you've got to do it. Because if you die in America and you don't have a will, then the state gets involved. And the last thing you want, even after you're dead, is for the state to be involved in anything involving you. So be proactive. Do this stuff now so that your family doesn't have to worry about it later. Knock this stuff out. Look, it's not just the legal component too. They have Identity Shield. You can get that. They have a small business plan. If you're somebody that carries a gun, they have access to that. Look, there's a variety of things you can use this for. It just in general, if you have questions about your rights, talk to your attorney. There's an app on your phone for it. If you get pulled over in the middle of the night, there's an 800 number that they pick up 24/7, okay? Do not speak to anybody until you talk to your attorney. Do not sign anything until you send it to your attorney to review it. Work wants you to sign some new document with some funny medical language in there that has to do with shots or something like that. Send it to your attorney. You got a speeding ticket or one of those red light traffic cams caught you, do not ever pay those things. Send them to your attorney. They'll take care of it for you. You know, if you have tax issues, if there's a variety of things. Some vendor said they were going to fix your watch and they didn't fix your watch. And they said, well, what are you going to do about it? Well, guess what? They're going to get a letter from your attorney now. So it levels the playing field. It gives us power back. That's why I chose the domain don'tgetpushedaround.com. I don't like the idea of us getting pushed around because we can't afford to fight back. So this does what we should have had all along. It gives us equal justice under the law, which is what they say we're supposed to have, but we know we don't. We know that if you've got a bunch of money, the laws tend to be a little bit more flexible, or maybe they're written in pencil, you know? So take back control of your life, knock out these legal documents, get all that stuff squared away, get that done. Get the documents finished, put them in your safe, forget about it, don't worry about it again. But if you want to check it out, go to www.don'tgetpushedaround.com. The link for this is also in the show notes. And also thank you to C60 Purple Power. You know, they're making the best C60 out there. What is C60, you ask? Oh, well, the guys that discovered it, it's a 60 molecule carbon atom that the guys that discovered it wound up winning the Nobel Prize for. It's a huge deal. It is the most powerful antioxidant known to man, by like hundreds of times more powerful than anything else out there. It helps to maximize the efficiency of your cells. It may provide cellular protection against many toxic environmental factors. It's like a spherical cage, like a hollow soccer ball traveling your body, looking for free radicals that it can neutralize and then reset itself again and again and again. It's amazing. Science is amazing. You know, when you get the good science, I'll tell you what, if this is the first time you're hearing of C60 Purple Power, then do this. Go to the website, read up about it. Go to shopc60.com. And if you find something you like, use the promo code MACRO to save yourself a little bit of money. I use this product every single morning. I've got 3 bottles of it in my drawer, and I've been using it for 3 years. When I get done, I have a spoonful every morning. I get done, I put my spoon down. My cat jumps on the counter and licks the spoon, you know, so it's good for pets too. If you have pets that are aging, they have pet formulas for that. If you just need it for yourself, they have that as well. So shopc60.com is the website, and you can use that promo code MACRO. Might as well. You're going to save yourself a little bit of money, and you're going to need it based on where we're going, and it's getting weird out there. It feels like a cultural revolution. It really does. And if you know anything about previous cultural revolutions, what you'll be disturbed to find out is that it's following that pattern as well. Now, not all are created equally, of course, but you take a look at some of the revolutions of the past, China, Cambodia, Soviet Union, and you go, well, that would never happen here. And maybe it never will happen where you are. But if you're in America, I got news for you. It's happening right now. You're a part of it. You're that frog in the pot of water that is incrementally getting turned up just a little bit hotter every single day. And you're going, boy, I'm sweating. You know, it feels hot in here. Do you guys feel that? And everyone else goes, oh, I don't notice anything. I don't notice anything as the stores are on fire behind you and the CVS and Walgreens are being looted by some lunatic with a shopping cart and a who doesn't care about the police coming because he knows they're not coming, or lighting cars on fire, or mostly peaceful protests, or all these things, you know, everyone's going, it's just stunning and brave. No, actually, it's the precursors to a cultural revolution. And we're going to talk about this because it's important, I think, from a historical standpoint, to take a look at what was going on in the past, if for no other reason other than to just at least see this is what they were doing. We should probably do something differently, and hopefully we'll get different results. Because when you take a look at places like China and Mao's cultural revolution, what you find, and well, really all of them, the Soviet revolution, the Cambodia under the Khmer Rouge with Pol Pot, Mao's 50-year reign of terror, all of these things, they end in a particular way with piles of dead bodies and no accountability. And a lot of really dumb people driving the bus on this, on these sorts of ideas, you know. So it's very, you know, look, you can buy a history book and read about all this stuff if you want. It's in there. But this ability to sort of take a look at the bigger picture and see how they connect to modern day society, I think is super important because it is undeniable that we're headed down this path. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at some of the older empires that went through these revolutions. And well, then not necessarily even empires, but empirical in their belief system and take a look at what they did, why they did it, and what the results were for them. I got news for you. It never ends well. And then sort of take a look at our situation and overlay that on these others and say, well, where are we in this process? Are we at the early stages? Are we at the end stage? Like, what happens if X, Y, and Z go down the way they did in Cambodia? Like, well, I got news for you. If it ends like it ends in Cambodia, it ends with pyramids of skulls being formed with all of the dead people that got on the wrong side of the government. So let's get into this. Let's start in China. Let's start with Mao's Cultural Revolution, which lasted from 1966 to 1976 when he died, presumably of embarrassment over this stupid idea that he had. It was unbelievably dumb, but it was the plan to preserve communism, you know, to keep this sort of thought going, this central planning of communism. Central planning never works, you know, because think about all the people that you see in government and what do they have in common? Well, they're dumb, they're ego-driven, they're manipulative, they're easily manipulated. And, you know, these are the wrong types of people to be in a position of power. And so when they're in charge of central planning, you know things are going to go wrong. And so whenever you start to talk about these ideas of communism or socialism or any sort of isms, you wind up being at the mercy of the controllers working in the state apparatus. And usually it's the worst. It's not the best and brightest. It's the dumbest and most vicious that wind up in these positions. And so when it comes to central planning, they're planning for themselves. The rest of the people sort of don't matter. And of course, the rest of the people are so far away from them, maybe geographically far away, or at least emotionally so far away from them, they're almost not real. So what are you going to do if you're China and you're centrally planning for all of these a billion six, you know, that you've got in China, and you're trying to make sure that you've got the right amount of food and the right amount of cement and the right amount of this and right? And you go, well, what happens about those people in the far west? You're like, ah, fuck them. I don't know what to tell you. What about the Uyghurs? Well, we didn't account for the Uyghurs so they don't eat. You know, what about those people? Well, those people kind of rub me the wrong way. So I'm not planning for them to have wheat this year. I'm planning for them to eat bugs, you know? So it's a psychotic mentality. But that's a underlying theme of all of these things. I mean, from the Soviet Union to the Khmer Rouge, you know, it's a psychopathic mentality that gets you to that place. And, you know, but part of what this cultural revolution was trying to do in China was trying to promote and preserve communism while purging capitalism, which is really ironic considering where China has come in the last 50 years since this cultural revolution blew up, is that it has been almost exclusively capitalistic in its methods. It's really, China's a really interesting place because it's kind of a hybrid. It's capitalistic in its industry, but it's communistic in its management and its upper management of the government. I mean, you know, it's communistic in the sense that if you have an idea that is counter to the dear leader Xi's ideas, and or you were to go to him, approach him and say, you know, this idea that this plan that you've put forth in our province here, it's not working well because X, Y, and Z are happening. What if we tried it different? What if we tried doing A, B, and C instead of X, Y, and Z? What do you think about that? His response is exit out stage right, and then they shoot you in the head. You know, so that doesn't inspire a whole lot of difference of opinion. Now I'm talking about Xi, I'm not talking about Mao, though Mao did it too. Mao did it at a level that Xi could only dream of. I mean, the estimates are varied because when you're talking about mass murder on this scale, it is hard to get an exact number, but I have seen estimates of the number of people that Mao slaughtered as high as 73 million. So when you're talking about 73 million people being systematically murdered by their own government. Well, that's just a form of governance that I'm not interested in participating in. If in order for your version of government to work, you have to murder 73 million other people to get the rest on board, then just admit that your idea is stupid and doesn't work. You know, that's sort of where we start. You know, and listen, if Mao didn't outright shoot you, you know, he's on record saying you confiscate the firearms before the slaughter, right? That which would make sense. You know, but if the firearms that were confiscated from the people and later used on them didn't get you, the mass starvation would, and 30 million people in China starved to death due to Mao's Cultural Revolution. It's just bad ideas on top of bad ideas. He did a thing where he had a little red book, which was, everyone had to have. It was Mao's statements, speeches, and writings, you know, like Mein Kampf 2, Electric Boogaloo. Yeah, leave it. The Germans innovate, right? And then the Chinese copy. So then denunciation rallies, you know, the class enemies were found like at the workplace or in your classroom or at your home, you know, the teacher. Our teacher is teaching us something that goes against Mao's dictates. I've got this little red book and our teacher is saying things that are different from that. And then that information gets back to the authorities. And the next thing you know, you're in math class. And the teacher gets dragged out by some officers, taken into the courtyard, and his brains are blown all over the back wall, you know. And you go, "Oh, I see what's going on here. That's how things are going to get done." So, denunciation rallies happened all the time. Drag you out and make you explain your sins, whether that was children ratting out their parents. That's a real common one. That's a common one because once you're a child and you turn your parents in to the state and the state murders your parents for wrongthink, then the state becomes your parents. And if you want to talk about growing up in a fucked up and dysfunctional family, try having the state as your family, you know? So we had that. We have Red Guards, which were made up of kids, students really, early on, to make people, turn people into Maoists, you know. We had revolutionary committees, which was made up of people and the army and the CCP, but really they kind of fizzled out because they got bogged down in all the bureaucracy and kind of, you know, didn't really do very well. But during this period, millions of people were killed and eaten. And I'm not even slightly kidding about that. When you're facing starvation, then, you know, sometimes you go savage. Sometimes you turn into you're in a position where you have to eat the other people. I can't even imagine that. I mean, you can't do that in modern day America because all these little fuckers have spike proteins in them. You can't eat the Antifa guys. They're disgusting. First of all, they're filled with soy. They've got to taste terrible. But if you get past that and you had barbecue sauce or whatnot, then you have to deal with the whole spike protein situation. It's not good. So they destroyed historic relics and artifacts and cultural statues. Sound familiar? There's going to be a lot of overlap when you hear all these things that were going on in the Soviet Union, in Cambodia, and China. And you're going to go, this sounds like Antifa and sounds like what's going on right now. And yeah. Well, hold that thought. We're going to get to that. We're going to explain how this all ties into modern day America. Well, modern, not even really limited to America, really the West in general. But that's what you do when you're trying to have this cultural revolution. You have to destroy the history because history is racist. Obviously, we know if there's one thing we learned in the summer of 2020, it's that statues are definitely racist. And mostly peaceful protests are totally fine when you're burning down buildings. But that Robert E. Lee statue's got to go. We have standards in this country, God damn it. Intellectuals were prosecuted and schools were closed during Mao's Cultural Revolution. Again, You have to take control of the thought process. You can't have intellectuals out there challenging you. If you're about to embark on a revolution in which you're going to ask people to not believe their own eyes, to detach from reality, you cannot have any sort of dissenting voices out there saying, this is crazy, or what are you doing, or wake up, or where is your humanity gone? That's a liability to these people. So they just simply cannot exist in this world. So they do to them what they do in all of these regimes. They murder them by the millions, and they're indiscriminate about it. There's no debate. There's no, oh, I'll go explain it to them. You've got the wrong guy. I wasn't saying that. I was saying this other thing. They misinterpret. There's no room for negotiation with these people. It's over. You understand? So it's important for us to be very honest about the reality of these situations. If you think you're going to talk your way out of it, you are fooling yourself. The history is littered with the bones of people that thought they were going to just explain it to the guy with the gun. It doesn't work that way. If he's got the gun and you don't have the gun, there's no explanation that's going to work. Now, during this time frame of this cultural revolution, you had things that were going on behind the scenes. You had Nixon and Kissinger and the Rockefellers trying to open up China. And by open up China, I mean repair relationships between the US and China so that we could utilize their industrial capacity to export our factories from the West, where we have labor rights and higher wages and industrial regulations and things like that, outsource that to China, which doesn't have all of those things. Hell, they've got pits filled with dead bodies from all the people that got on the wrong side of their government. They don't give a shit about human rights. They don't care about union rights. They don't care about environmental rights. They don't give a fuck about any of that stuff, which is perfect if you're soulless megalomaniacs like the Rockefellers, Kissingers, and Bushes, where you go in and say, this is exactly the type of people we want to work with. These are the type of people that get things done, right? So this is what's going on, sort of the backdrop. Kissinger and Rockefeller and these guys opened up that, you know, put that those cracks and sort of got their way in, wedged their way into China in the early 70s. And this was going on, this revolution was going on from 1966 to 1976. So a 10-year period. Not to be confused with the Great Leap, which was something else, which moved, transitioned a lot of these poor farmers from the rural areas into the cities and turned them into, you know, engineers, where they're like, well, you know, I know you've been growing rice for 77 generations in your family, but from now on, you're going to be making steel. And the guy's like, I don't know how to make steel. They're like, well, you're going to make steel. And so that's what they did. You know, they had all the Chinese guys in there and, well, fuck it, I guess we're making steel now. And they'd make all this steel and it would be super low quality and they'd hand it in and the steel wouldn't, they'd just throw it away. You know, so it wasn't even like it was well organized. It was just chaos and this transition from the rural parts into the farms. And what does that do psychologically to a society too? You know what I mean? So it's very destabilizing, and culturally, it's destabilizing in terms of just division of labor. You know what I mean? Okay, great. All you guys left the farms and moved into the cities to go make widgets so that we could sell them in America. But who's manning the farms? We still need to eat, right? We still need to feed these 1.6 billion Chinese people. So what else are we doing? So it wasn't even really well planned. It was, but again, when you allow megalomaniacs to be in charge of foreign policy, you get problems like this. And when you become so bloodthirsty and authoritarian that nobody even dares to tell you the reality of the situation on the streets, then you spiral into insanity, you know, and you wind up like Nero or Napoleon, you know, all these guys that finally just went insane with their own power. So Are you familiar with Yuri Bezmenov? Oh, man. Now, you go watch some interviews that he did with G. Edward Griffin from the 70, late 70s and 80s, and you'll know you've got the right ones, judged by the clothes they're wearing. And listen to Yuri Bezmenov talk about... fucking listen to him talk about everything, frankly, but talking about demoralization. And he was a former KGB agent with the Soviet Union who was based in India, and he really loved India, and he saw that India was being infiltrated by the Soviets, and he thought it was real, you know, he didn't love the way this was going, and he defected, he turned and went to the West and moved to Canada and lived in the United States for a while. And he had been, you know, he was a journalist. He was writing about all of this stuff. So it's important for you to hear his words. And then, but when you're listening to his words, I want, and this quote I'm going to read, in your mind, think about Antifa, right? Think about those people like on the loony left that are, you know, they're out there. They're not really deep thinkers. They're very angry, but they don't know what they're angry at. They're mad at the patriarchy, but they can't explain what the patriarchy is. Everybody's a Nazi, but they don't know what Nazi actually is an acronym for. You know, all those people, the dummies that they get really wrapped up. And just envision those people, the underarm Molotov cocktail crowd, and now listen to this quote from Yuri Bezmenov and just understand where things are going. Because what the Antifa left fails to understand, because they're too fucking stupid to figure this out, they never understand history. They don't know history. History is racist as far as they're concerned. They would benefit from learning a little bit about history, because it's going to come back to bite them in the ass. So listen to this quote. The useful idiots, the leftists who are idealistically believing in the beauty of the Soviet socialist or communist or whatever system, when they get disillusioned, they become the worst enemies. That's why my KGB instructors specifically made the point, never bother with leftists. Forget about those political prostitutes. They serve a purpose only at the stage of destabilization of a nation. For example, your leftists in the USA, all these professors and all the beautiful civil rights defenders, they are instrumental in the process of the subversion, only to destabilize a nation. When their job is completed, they are not needed anymore. They know too much. Some of them, when they get disillusioned, they will see that Marxist-Leninists come to power. Obviously, they get offended. They think they will come to power. That will never happen, of course. They will be lined up against the wall and shot. And it reminds me of World War II. And it reminds me of what the people, the brown shirts, the SA, this was, the SA was before the SS. Everybody knows about the SS, but not too many people know about the SA. Their unofficial name was the brown shirts. They had brown uniforms. And that was the group that went around when Hitler was coming to power. You know, it wasn't World War II yet. It was just this rise to power. And he had this group of people that he could use to go into a city and break all the windows and beat up some people and burn a building down and cause problems and shoot the mayor and do all these things, right? They just cause problems and chaos. And they were real annoyance. But they weren't soldiers necessarily. I mean, they were sort of low level guys, and he used them for a variety of things, but he never told them that while he was using them to create chaos throughout Germany and elsewhere, he was secretly growing a parallel organization called the SS, the Schutzstaffel. And this group, when it was ready, when it was fully trained, and this was the real deal. The SS was the real deal. I mean, they were the top level psychopaths. They were the Einsatzgruppen type guys, the kill squads, and the heavily invested in army that was trained beyond just the regular army, right? Once the SA was done with their rabble-rousing or whatever it was they were used to do, the chaos generation that they were involved in being a part of, what happened was that Hitler then told the SS, wipe them out. He took them all up. He lined them up against the wall and shot them. Exactly what Bezmenov was talking about here. So the thing about Antifa and these groups is that they're too stupid to know anything about history. So they're never going to see it coming when they're the ones lighting fires and throwing Molotov cocktails and burning down Nike stores and mostly peaceful protests and all that shit. When it comes right down to it, what's going to happen to them is the same thing that happened to the SA, but they'll never figure it out because they're stunning and brave. The Khmer Rouge, let's talk about them. The Khmer Rouge was an organization in Cambodia, came to power. Oh, I don't know. There's a movie, The Killing Fields. You might have seen that. It won an Oscar in the 80s. Very well done. Very sad. Very similar outcome. Like in China, millions die from totally preventable causes like starvation, lack of medicine, and persecution for national purity, you know, whatever that means. So they were trying to create in Cambodia a closed society where nobody could get in and nobody could get out. You know, we're going to do this all ourselves, to the point where they said, we're going to make our own medicine. We're not going to import in medicine to, you know, we're just going to make our own. So a bunch of people just died because the medicine they were making was garbage. And I was like, take two leeches and call me in the morning. You know, it was primitive stuff. So, but that's what happens when you allow these sort of thought leaders in there, like Pol Pot, who comes to power and starts to, starts to put his plan into place, which is, you know, we're going to insulate ourselves. We're going to create this closed system here. And anybody that is a threat to us will just murder because we can't be subject to any sort of secondary voice, right? So they went after, they tried really dumb ideas and lots of people died. You know, I mentioned the medicine part and it was similar to that. This was not a technologically advanced society at this point in the 70s, right? We're talking about 75 to 79, I think, somewhere around there, when this regime, the Khmer Rouge, went through. And they killed, out of 8 million people in Cambodia, they killed 2 million people, okay, in just a couple of years. This is how they do it. And what they would do is they went looking for political enemies, right? Anybody that doesn't agree with this. And they did the same thing that Mao did in China, which was, you know, children turning in their parents, you know, students turning in their teachers, you know, workers turning in their bosses. Like anybody that seemed a little too smart or was telling you what to do when you didn't want to do it or wasn't on board with the program, they would murder them. And the way they would murder them is they had these sticks with a big ball on the end and they would whack you in the back of the head with it. And it would crack your skull. And they built pyramids of skulls, gigantic pyramids of skulls. And they all had those cracks in the back of the head because they were all murdered that way. And when they ran out of political enemies to murder, they just started looking for people that looked intellectual. So they started murdering anybody wearing glasses because they said, well, you've got glasses, you look smart, so let's kill you. And again, crazy dystopian psychopathic hellscape for sure. This happened in my lifetime. This didn't happen 375 years ago. This happened in the 70s. You know, this is a real, there are plenty of people alive that lived through this. It can happen again. That's the thing that we get hung up on is, oh, this will never happen again. That's crazy. Yes, it is crazy, but it can happen again. And I ask you, given what we've gone through the last 2 years, where we have people that are telling you not to believe your eyes and telling you to believe absurdities and to tell you that you have to wear a mask or you won't be allowed into to your job or on an airplane or on a train or at school or into the grocery store or the gym or you know, your kids, you can't drop your kid off at school without you. But you see the insanity there. And if you were the person that goes, this is stupid, I'm not participating. It's the big stick in the back of the head. You know, so remember, this can happen. They, China financed this, right? China and Mao financed this nonsense going on in Cambodia. And of course, Kissinger was thrilled with it. He's fine with it because he's a depopulation guy. So he even, you know, when the Vietnam War was involved, you know, he had roles that was, you know, he was bombing Cambodia, but, this is the type of regime that Kissinger would love to work with, you know, because they get stuff done. So the Khmer Rouge, which was this group, this army of Pol Pot's guys, they were basically trying to blend communism with like a xenophobic nationalism. You know, we're just going to be in this little country. Nobody else is going to come in and bother us, and we're not going to bother anybody else. But within this closed system, if you get out of line, we're going to be operating from, with totally different societal rules than maybe everybody else. And that includes you're wearing glasses, I'm going to kill you. And again, you might get killed by a 9-year-old. You know what I mean? That's sort of the crazy part of this was that it was killings by child soldiers and you know, kids that were teenagers that were recruited into this army. Again, when you hand over your parents to the state and the state murders them, then the state becomes your parents. And when the state tells you, you're in the army now, here's your stick and your AK-47, well, then that's what you're doing. So they were, this group of the Khmer Rouge was described as draconian, dictatorial, and a fascist regime. And I would agree, they certainly did put the dick in dictatorial. That is for sure. When you are building mountains, a pyramid mountains of the skulls of the people that you've murdered, you are on the wrong side of history. Let's move on to the Soviet Union. So the Cultural Revolution in the Soviet Union started in 1918, right? So we're like World War I, Bolshevik Revolution. Everything's crazy there. They've got this massive state empire, sort of, that's geographically just takes up so much space, 13 different time zones. You know, it's the biggest country in terms of size in the world, and they were trying to control it, which is a tough task to do, especially when 60% of the population was illiterate. They just couldn't read. So when you know that, then you have to understand that the plan has to be flexible based on who you're dealing with. And when you've got a 60% illiterate population, then the propaganda has to match that, right? So you get into something called agitprop, which was propaganda that was targeted at people that couldn't read. And so you're going to get a lot of posters, a lot of visuals, a lot of short slogans, a lot of, you know, the fist or the profile of the soldier or the wheat, you know, and whatever. It's meant to be symbols. It's meant to be visual. It's meant to be very small, bite-sized lingo, where even the dumb guys I shouldn't say dumb, just because they're illiterate doesn't mean that they're dumb. They just don't know how to read or write. But the point is, those people need to be on board with it. They need to understand it. So you need to tailor the message so that everybody can understand it, including and especially the people that can't read, because this is the way you're going to be able to reach them. You're not going to get them to read your books, and you're not going to be able to get them to listen or to read your pamphlets that you're handing out at the factories, but you are going to be able to get them to see the posters. And you are going to get them to get an idea that, you know, when you have little slogans, it's like, you know, like whatever their slogans are, like, you know, Soviet power, we work together, you know, whatever it is, you know, something like that. So you've got to, you got to keep it simple, stupid, you know, for these two. So the main task was to introduce the Marxist principles into the minds of the Soviet citizens, however best to do that. So some of it was dumbed down. Some of it was a little bit more nuanced in the propaganda. So they immediately, the state nationalized publishing houses, museums, film factories, schools, and anything news related. They just took it over, right? It might still exist in its name, but it now is under the control of the state, and therefore the messaging will reflect that of the state. So everyone was re-educated with Marxist ideologies through the end of the USSR, you know, through the end, you know, all the way to the end. Mass culture through mass education was kind of, kind of the thing. What's interesting about it is that as you got later into like the 70s and 80s, and you had Pravda, and you had all of the, you know, the propaganda that we in the West would look at Russia, and we would go, oh, wow, look at those poor Russians. They don't even know. They're just getting lied to on their television. Little did we know that we were actually getting lied to. In fact, the lying was going to take on an unusual format just a couple decades later, when we were going to get lied to on an industrial scale. And the difference between the Soviets in the Soviet citizens in the 70s and 80s and the American citizens in the 2000s and 2010s and present day is that the Soviet public knew they were being lied to. Americans don't know it. The vast majority of Americans do not think they're being lied to. They think that they're getting the truth on their nightly news. They think that Anderson Cooper is being straight up with them. They think Rachel Maddow cares about their best interest. They think Jim Cramer is there trying to help make them rich. I mean, they believe absurdities, right? But the Soviets did not. The Soviet citizenry, they said, we know what this is. This isn't going to work. So back to Yuri Bezmenov. He's, again, because the guy is brilliant, and he saw it from an angle that he was in it. So he knew it inside and out. And it must have sounded like insanity when he's talking to Ed about this in the 80s. But now when you listen to these interviews with him, you go, it's so obvious that he's correct. It's so obvious. So here's another quote. He says, as I mentioned before, exposure to true information does not matter anymore. A person who is demoralized is unable to assess true information. The facts tell him nothing. Even if I shower him with information, with authentic proof, with documents and pictures, he will refuse to believe it. That's the tragedy of the situation of demoralization. So, given what Yuri Bezmenov just said there, think about COVID with that. I can show you information. I can shower him with information, authentic proof. Nothing's going to change it. His mind has been broken through fear. The media broke everybody's minds. They did that because they know how to do it. They did that because psychologically we are ripe for that sort of things. Tavistock Institute knows exactly how far you can push human beings. We've had the Milgram experiments. We've had the Stanford research. We've had plenty of experiments. They know how to manipulate us, okay? And they know that if they subject us to constant, never-ending fear for a period of time, that it will break our brains to a point that afterwards, if we were presented with authentic information, as Bezmenov talks about, it won't matter. I've got good news, everybody. The virus has a 99.98% survivability rate and a median death age of 80. You're all going to live. You're going to be fine. Guy's like, why don't you have a mask on? You're like, I'm never going to reach you, right? It's just never going to happen. And what a shame too, you know? But demoralization and ideological subversion allow you to destroy a country without even firing a shot. And look at America these days. I use America as a prime example because, for one, I'm here. And for two, it's fallen the furthest than any country I've seen from where it was to where it is. And it has to do with demoralization. Once they can convince you to believe absurdities, once they can convince you not to believe your own eyes, to trust in something else, Once they can get you to believe, no, not believe, to know in your soul that if you go one direction down the grocery store aisle, you'll be fine. But if you go the wrong direction down the other aisle, you're going to catch COVID and die. Your brain is broken. If you believe that, your brain is broken. And what Bezmenov says is that once it's broken, it never gets fixed. Okay, so let's move on to the four steps of ideological subversion. And Yuri Bezmenov explains the framework and the process for ideological subversion on a national scale. Step one, demoralization. This step takes 15 to 20 years in order to educate a generation using teachers and the media who have been sympathetic or supportive of the cause being pushed by those trying to subvert the nation. Students attack the moral fabric of the country and try to remove it. Again, look at what's going on today in universities and schools. Just follow libs of TikTok to see what's going on in the schools. Everybody's trans. Everybody's cake gender. I'm stunning and brave. I want to talk to my kindergarten class about being pansexual. Why won't the teachers let me talk about my... Why won't the parents let me talk about genders? I want to show the students My Two Mommies, this book. And this is all part of Black Lives Matter. Hey, cultural critical race theory. We're teaching that in school. Diversity, DEI is being brought up in corporations. We've got, announced Common Core math taught to teach kids that 3 times 4 could be 11 if you show your work and show how you got it. But we're not going to mark it wrong, because to mark it wrong would be to criticize you. And we can't criticize you because then you wouldn't be stunning and brave and you'd have to find your safe space. And so all of this shit is not accidental. What Bezmenov is saying is that this is part of demoralization. It takes 20 years. But if you've got the time and you've got the inclination and you've got a target country, you can do it. And I would suggest that it has been done. This isn't something that could be done to America. This is something that has already been done to America. Step two, destabilization. This step takes 2 to 5 years in order to change the country's foreign relations, defense, and economy. Okay. Foreign relations, you mean like a war in Ukraine for no good reason, or a war in Syria, or sanctions on Russia, or sanctions on Iran? If you start doing things like that with your country's foreign relations, that is part of a destabilization program. All of a sudden, you no longer have the relationships with these countries that you used to have, because you are doing things like convincing NATO to get involved in a Ukraine war that they have no business being involved in. And you have the same thing going on with Syria. You have America financing Saudi Arabia to destroy Yemen, the poorest country in the world. You have all of these things going on. This destabilizes our country. Obviously, it destabilizes Ukraine and Syria and Yemen and these places where actual bombs are falling on them. And I don't want to in any way, shape, or form diminish that. That they're taking the brunt of this quite clearly. But I'm not talking about the invasion with regard to those targeted countries. I'm talking about it in terms of destabilization of the country doing it. You're losing your soul by doing this to other countries. He talks about in order to change the country's defense apparatus. You mean like general pronoun with the three masks and the face shield? The guy that used to work at Raytheon, Lloyd Austin, that piece of shit. Yeah, this is the woke army, stunning and brave woke army, lowers the entrance qualifications for the men. You no longer have to have a high school diploma. You can have a criminal record now. You can have neck tattoos. You can have job stopper tattoos. And I'm not passing judgment on this. I'm just saying that they specifically said neck tattoos, knuckle tattoos, and all this stuff is now accepted in the army. I'm not trying to, if you've got those, I'm not trying to say anything one way or the other. I'm just saying that they were never allowed in the army before, or the military. And they are now. physical fitness requirements have been lowered across the board for men and women. Reading and math requirements, like they're taking anybody in the army now. They just are. That's part of this. He talked about destabilization in terms of the economy. You mean printing 80% of all dollars in existence in 1 year? You mean that, Mr. Bezmenov? Or is that what we're talking about? Because that seems destabilizing to me from a financial standpoint, which of course it is. Step number three in the four steps of ideological subversion. Number three, crisis. Need 6 weeks. Listen to this. This is what he said in the 80s. Listen to it. And with regard to COVID, you need a crisis. You need 6 weeks of chaos as a climactic turning point. Oh, COVID, lockdowns, forced injections, fear porn, Black Lives Matter, mostly peaceful protest. You mean that? You mean that? Only 6 weeks? We've been doing it for 3 fucking years. We are completely destabilized at this point. Number four, normalization. This stage changes what the status quo looks like and might include a form of military takeover. So this is, we were always at war with Eurasia, you know, straight out of 84. This is don't believe your own eyes. This is normalization. Of course, children had heart attacks at playgrounds. That's why we're putting the defibrillator units there. Duh. Of course, soccer players used to just drop dead on the field. I mean, you never actually saw it, but it was happening. Of course, this is normal that people are just sports anchors and newscasters and politicians standing up giving presentations are falling over backwards on their head. Of course, this is totally normal. It's all normal. You're the abnormal one for questioning whether or not this is normal. It's brilliant, really. He goes on to say that the KGB only spent about 15% of their time on actual espionage. He said that the other 85% was focused on ideological subversion, manipulation, and brainwashing to manipulate public opinion so that people will reject obvious facts. Obvious facts is what they want to convince people to reject. I ask you, look out into the world. God's sake, go on Twitter. And you tell me, is there a concerted effort to get people to reject obvious facts? I say there is. I say there is, and it's not even deniable at this point. Now let's move on to the woke agenda. The enter the woke agenda for ideological subversion. Let's have some fun with these dipshits. Okay. The dictionary defines woke as meaning socially aware of injustice. Okay. Socially aware of injustice. Well, actually, if we're going to play their game, it's actually an ideology used for cultural subversion. I mean, given what I've just gone through these four steps, it wokeism plays right into this. It is. Don't believe your own eyes. It is trying to manipulate people's opinions so that they reject obvious facts. Obvious facts, you mean like men can get pregnant and have periods? You mean those obvious facts? Or you, what do you mean that I'm Python gender today? Like, okay. That's good. These are the obvious facts that. So they want you to believe absurdities, because if they can get you to believe absurdities, they can get you to commit atrocities. That's how this works. So I think we would all agree that the woke mob put the cult in cultural subversion. You know what I mean? They really did. It's a cult. And this ideology, it feels kind of like a new religion to me. I mean, COVID felt like a religion to me. When you would see the lady go up on stage, and I watched this. I mean, there's a million people giving presentations, so I don't expect you to know what I'm talking about just from this description. But there was a lady that I watched, and she looked, if NPR was a person, It was this lady, I assure you. She walked up to the stage, masked on, double masks on, right? She walks up to the stage or to the podium. She takes the masks off. She folds the flaps over and puts it down on the thing. She takes two pumps from the Purell sanitizer, wipes it on her hands, gets her thing situated, and then just takes a breath. And then she goes on. And I just looked at it and I went, this is a religion to her. She's got it was like the rosary beads of COVID. Felt like the hand pump and the order in which she did it. It all felt it just felt like something you would do during a religious service or something, you know? And this woke ideology has a lot of religious components to it as well. I mean, it would be the dumbest religion ever, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't have some of those, a clearly like cult-like following. And I wouldn't even say like traditional religion. It's more like some of those obscure religions that where like we got to drink, you know, we got to eat, put on the black Nikes and put the purple scarves over our head because the mothership is behind the comet and we all have to go kill ourselves today. You know, like that sort of shit. That's kind of how I feel. It's, you know, we're like, there's only one truth, you know, how there's like those religions where there's only one truth. The wokeism feels like it's a religion where there's only one truth, and questioning it is equal to heresy, with the non-believers slated to either be converted to this religion or destroyed. You know, those are your two options, submit or die. And there's this great article. And whenever I read an article that I sort of infuse into the show, I want to try, I always give credit to it because I don't, well, for one, I want to support their work, but I also don't want people to think that I'm stealing their work too. But there's an article from Chuck Moss that was fantastic talking about this on what does woke mean? You know, what does it mean really? And the way he described it, I thought was great. He was talking about that woke is authoritarianism with no individual rights to base human dignity and freedom on. So people will get shepherded into flocks and directed by the leaders of the movement. You know what I mean? It's very cult-like. He was talking about woke collectivists, how dangerous they are. Obviously, I think we know this, but part of it is that they reject human individualism. And anytime you reject human individualism, it pushes you further away from being human. And when you consider, and when you're no longer human and the people that you're surrounded by are no longer human, then you can do unspeakable things to them because in your mind, they're insects to you, you know? And so that is a dangerous part of this. They herd people into these defined characteristics like race and sex and religion, and they deny human dignity to you. These are all tactics that Mao and Pol Pot and Stalin and these guys use. This is the same tactic. This is not new. That's the thing about the woke cult. It feels new to those that don't know history, but it's not new. The tactics have been used before. You know, these whole things. They assign collective guilt. You know, that's the tactic of the woke, is they assign collective guilt. This is the reason why you see all these white women out there going, well, white people are so terrible and blah, 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 you know, and I hate white people and we're so awful. And it's collective guilt. You have to do this in the woke religion to move up the totem pole, because that woke defines people by race and then sorts them out by privilege. Oh, you're super privileged. So you're lower on the totem pole. You know, that's why you have to be like a three-legged transsexual Indonesian midget, because if you're that, then you're way up higher on the totem pole of persecution than everybody else. So if you've got too much privilege, you got to check your privilege, as they say, right? So like a white female feminist is greater than a white straight male, right? And but then a black female is greater than a white female feminist, you know, if we're doing these math equations out here. So it's like you could be but a white female feminist is lower on the totem pole than a man who identifies as trans. Oh shit. You one-upped me. Here I am, this white female feminist saying, you know, talking about how much I hate white people and how I want to pay reparations to the black community and go live in Chaz in Seattle, you know, and all these things. And then here this white guy comes along and identifies as a trans man, you know, whatever. I don't even know. Trans female, trans man. I don't know. Whatever. Trans something. And now he's just leapfrogged me. Now he's higher in the rankings than me. He got a patch that says trans whatever. You know, he got a star. He got an extra star on his uniform for doing that. And so now he's higher up the totem pole than you. But black female trumps all. You can't get higher than black female unless you're a black female lesbian. Then if you're a black female lesbian, then you are the king of the world, queen of the world. I'm not gendering you. You're the cake gender of the world, right? As Chuck Moss sort of points out in this article, he's saying that one class whose status is inviolate is African Americans. That you can't fuck with them. They are a protected class inside this woke ideology. They run it, right? And so, like, you can't be transracial, or you get the Rachel Dolezal treatment, right? Where they just run her out, or the Talcum X, Sean King, right? You get sort of like you laughed at. So you don't. You can be trans and play that game where you're all these different genders. But if you try to do that transracial thing, they'll put an end to that real quick, right? So then you get into this concept of intersectionality, which means that there are other classes of victims that have hitched a ride along with race. So it's not just about race. It's about all these other things, you know, that add on in addition to race. Like, I'm handicapped, or I have ADHD, or I have anxiety disorder, or I have a club foot, or I'm, you know, bipolar, or something like that, right? So there's all these add-on features. This is intersectionality. It's garbage, horseshit, obvious. I mean, at its core. I mean, let me be crystal clear. None of this stuff makes any fucking sense at all. But this is their language. And so it's important to understand the language, because you're going to have to deal with this, with these dipshits for the rest of your life, right? And for those that are paying attention, you understand that power is the goal here, right? Not saving the world. They talk about saving the world, but Pol Pot talked about saving his community too. And Mao talked about saving China, and Stalin talked about saving Russia. And these people all talk about saving everybody else, but that's just a cover story for their desires to rule everybody else. That's what it really boils down to. Everything must be an instrument of oppression or an instrument of struggle. So any attack against the oppressor class, meaning me, a straight white man, is considered fair game. If I'm in that oppressor class to them, then everything I do is an instrument of oppression. This podcast is oppressing everybody, apparently. What can I say? I'm good at my job. I'm good at oppressing people. And so because of that, because I'm out here oppressing you guys so well, I have to be destroyed, right? Obviously, that's what they think. So they think that every institution, every cultural norm, every tradition, history or whatever is an action or a deliberate instrument of oppression by the dominant class, meaning white people here, you know, but the dominant class. So everything is oppression. That's why you get the victimization decathlon that we're talking about here, where everyone is just like trying to one-up each other with how shitty their lives have been. That's what losers do. To be fair, that's what losers do. They talk about all their defeats. Winners don't do that. Winners don't dwell in that. they recognize their defeats so that they can be better the next time around so that they won't be defeated. But they don't celebrate their defeats. They don't talk about how great it is that they have all of these flaws. They try to fix their flaws. That's what winners do. Losers, like the Antifa group, the woke group, they're all a bunch of losers. Nobody, none of them are doing anything of any substantial value. They're just circle jerking and talking about their gender. And they make these TikTok videos. And you realize, first of all, when you take a look at their face, you can see the SSRI in their eyes, right? You can see that they're zooted out on hormones and antidepressants and all of these things that make you very unstable. But they're also very uninteresting. They're not talking about anything of any substance. They talk about how they talk about their gender, and they talk, and it's like the only thing that they've got going for them. But in that insulated little world, that's a big deal to them because they get elevated or demoted based on, you know, you can get demoted too. You're not always going up. You could be pushed down, and God forbid you know, that's why you see these pictures of these beautiful girls before they go to, you know, like they go to college and they're like beautiful as a freshman in college. And then you see them as a senior in college and their hair is all janky and they've got 18 piercings in their face. And you go, what the fuck happened to you? You got into the woke crowd where your privilege is looked at as a negative, right? You don't benefit from that. So you have to dumb yourself down, ugly yourself up. You know, you have to look as disgusting and as you know, homely as you can, because you get points for that in this world. It's wild, man. So, but they see this. They see that everything is sort of an instrument of oppression by the dominant class, white people now. But it could be someone else. So everyone is a victim. So everything existing is fair game to be destroyed, because they think they're being victimized by how everything is, history, cultural norms, tradition. That's why they want to get rid of the patriarch, down with the patriarchy, down with this, down with that, down with that. You know, all the things that, down with the Robert E. Lee statue, all the things that were normal, that were cultural or part of history. That is there because the horrible white man put that there. And to be fair, look, white people have done some bad shit, but I'm not here to shit all over my people, because we've done some good things too. And frankly, I wasn't a part of either one of them. So it's not my problem, you know, and I wasn't involved. So don't try and pin this on me. You're not going to get me to feel collective guilt. Go fuck yourself. I'm not going to feel guilty for stuff that happened. I'm not going to, my people were slaves 175 years ago. That's awful. I agree. That's awful. It should never have happened, and it should never happen again. I fully agree with that. But if you want me to feel guilty about, if you want me personally to feel guilty about that, I won't. I recognize it was an injustice. It should never have happened. But if you want me to feel guilty about it, I'm sorry, I just don't, because I didn't do it and I wasn't a part of it. And if you want me to pay reparations on it, you got to get the fuck out of here with that, because that's crazy. Okay. San Francisco talking about paying $5 million in reparations to every black person that lives there. It's like, okay, where's the comet? Where's this asteroid when you need it? You know what I mean? Like, where is it? But again, when you listen to Yuri Bezmenov, he lays this whole thing out. None of this stuff should come as a surprise to us. So how should we define wokeism now? Now that we sort of know that this is part of a cultural revolution, America's cultural revolution, really. How do we define wokeism now? Because the dictionary defined it as meaning socially aware of injustice. How about this? Woke, an intolerant, revolutionary, collectivist ideology of power that is at war with all society and is deeply racist. Will that work? I mean, I think it will. They're deeply racist. You know, and again, look, how many times have we talked about projection? You know, when every time Hillary Clinton gives a speech, it's just classic projection. She's railing on and on and on about these things that are the problems. And everybody that knows who Hillary Clinton is like, you're guilty of all of those things. In fact, you're the person doing all those things. So it's classic projection, right? So that everybody else is racist. They're racist. The NHL tried to hold a job fair in the state of Florida, the National Hockey League, tried to hold a job fair in the state of Florida. And in this job fair, they said, white people do not apply. Don't even bother coming. We are only hiring minorities. We're hiring people of color, people that are disadvantaged, blah, blah, blah. And Ron DeSantis said, we're shutting this thing down. You're not doing this. You don't get to come in here and just be reverse racist. And this is fine. This is racism, okay? Or payback. It's payback racism, you know? So it's not that the woke crowd is like, we need to make everything fair and we need to remove racism. I'm all for that. I'm all for let's not be racist. I don't care what color spacesuit you're wearing. I wear a white spacesuit. That's the spacesuit I was born in. You have a black one, or maybe your mocha one. I don't give a shit. Are you a good person? If you're a good person, a nice person, and you're cool, we'll be fine. The color of your spacesuit means as much to me as the color of your eyes. Just an interesting tidbit about you, but it doesn't define you necessarily, unless you choose to make it define you. But again, if you live your life and you define yourself by the spacesuit that you're wearing, the color, you're a black person or a white person, then that's really limiting yourself. You know, if that's all you've got going is the color of your skin, then you just have to be honest and admit that you don't have a whole lot going on. So I'm all for there not being racist people here. But the woke people are just reverse racist. They're just racist against, they're racist against everybody, but especially white people. And so I think that it is, following up with this definition, an intolerant, they're the most intolerant people around, without a doubt. If you don't fit into their box, then you're the enemy. And if you do fit into their box, they're going to ask you to fit into another box. And if you don't fit in that box, then you're the enemy again. There's no pleasing these people. You can't ever manipulate yourself and get yourself into the right sort of frame of, well, I'm going to go explain to the woke mob what's going on. This is back to that scenario. I'm going to go explain to that soldier over there how there's been a huge mistake. They're not interested in the explanation. They're not listening. They don't want an explanation. They want to murder you. They just haven't gotten to the point where they're armed yet. And here's the thing about the racism part with the woke crowd. They're deeply racist, okay? But the thing is, they think they're not. And the reason why they think they're not is because in their language, they've changed the definition of racism so that it doesn't apply to them. Very convenient. You know, like what we saw going on when they're changing the definition of herd immunity and vaccines and vaccinated and all that stuff when the CDC was doing that with COVID and everything. Like, are you fixing the problem? I'm changing the definition. So in a roundabout way, I am fixing the problem because I'm changing the definition. Oh, the problem's gone? No, the problem's been rebranded. So the woke crowd says, we're not racist because racist means that you have to be white to be racist. And we're not white. So therefore, we're not racist. And it's like, oh, I get it. I see what you're doing. You're playing word games here. They avoid facts. This gets us back into this biological genders and 2 + 2 = 5 and all this shit. They avoid facts because facts were decided on by the dominant group as a tool of white supremacy. Because everybody knows facts are super racist, right? Math is clearly the most racist thing out there. So these are the brain worms that these guys have, because they're going out there and they're saying facts are racist because they're a tool of the established power structure, and the established power structure are white people. And white people use these facts to manipulate everybody. So what we're going to do is we're going to fight back against the power structure and these white people and all these facts by countering their facts with our own version of facts. And you go, yeah, but your facts are wrong. And they say, well, that's your opinion on our facts. And I say, no, no, 3 times 4 isn't 11, no matter how many times you try to tell me that it is. And if you become an engineer and you build a bridge that cars drive across, that bridge is going to fall down. So there are facts. There are, to be fair, some topics that are subjective that we can debate, and we can have you come at it from one place, I come at it from another. Math is not one of those instances. It's pretty cut and dry. Now, you might not understand it. You may not understand complex math. I don't know how far everybody got in math and, you know, in college, calculus too. Listen, I only was passing those classes because I had to. I fully recognized while I was sitting in a Calc 2 class in college going, if I ever need this in my job, I have made a serious vocational error. You know, there's no possible way I'm going to need this. I'm not going to be in this line of work. I just had to pass it to pass the class so I could get a degree, which is a whole nother story. Anyway, and it boils down to this with the woke ideology. You basically have two choices. You join them or they try to destroy you. Okay. This is very important for people to understand with regard to how you deal with the woke mob moving forward. Do not ever bow down to them. Do not ever apologize to them. Do not ever try to make them happy. Don't try to meet them in the middle. Don't do any of that stuff. The only way to deal with them is to come over the top with them. They come at you with aggression. You come over the top with them with twice the aggression. It's the only way. You never back down. You can never give these people an inch. They'll never be happy. You give them something that you think will make them happy, Jordan Peterson. They will demand something else later from you. It always happens. Because you have to understand, they don't want a solution. They want more problems. They constantly want to divide the group into smaller and smaller pieces. You are going to be asked to do something later on. You submit to them now and say, fine, I'll put pronouns in my bio. I'll just put it because I don't give a fuck. I don't want to deal with you people anymore. I'll put pronouns in my bio. It's never going to end there. You know that, right? You're going to have to sign the petition telling management you want a third bathroom for trans people. You recognize that, right? It's a never-ending list of demands from them. They are emotional piranhas that when they smell blood, they go after it and they will destroy you. And then they turn on each other, which is hilarious. So let's end it by saying this. Let's end it by saying this. I saw this recently. It was such a great line. That I thought I would use it in this because it seemed appropriate. The world isn't divided by race, gender, or sexual orientation. It's divided by the wise and the fools. And the fools divide themselves by race, gender, and sexual orientation. Hey, if you like this episode, you can take the additional step right now of sharing it with your friends and family. I certainly do appreciate it. If you like the show, you can rate the show. Give me 5 stars if you think I've earned it. The algorithms seem to appreciate that and write a little review. You can follow me on Twitter @macroaggressions, and I will talk to you all again.